What a day it has been. Welcome to episode 37 of the new Ice City podcast. I'm your host, Vincent Mercogliano of the USA Today Network, and I don't even know where to start. We are here on Wednesday, July 28th, the first day of NHL free agency for the summer of 2021. There's been a lot that has happened in the past week since our previous episode, which happened prior to the NHL draft, which at this point feels like it was weeks ago, but it wasn't. It was only a matter of days ago. But here we are with the draft to cover, trades to cover, free agency to cover, a lot of stuff to talk about on today's episode. But I should start with this. I want to make sure I don't forget this and I say this right at the top. And that is this week's guest. I'm really excited about this week's guest. The Rangers did end up holding on to their first round pick in the NHL draft, and they selected Brendan Othman, a winger from Canada, two-way player, goal scorer, brings a lot of physicality and is the type of guy that the Rangers feel like can play up and down their lineup. They feel like he'll bring some scoring upside, but that he'll also bring some of the other gritty elements that they want to add to their lineup. So Brendan was kind enough to join me for this week's episode. So we'll hear from him in a little bit after we cover some of this stuff up front, but I want to make sure that I tease that right at the beginning that we do have the Rangers' first-round pick from this year's draft on the show this week. With that, let's get into all the other stuff that's happened. Now, last week we spent a decent amount of time on Barclay Gaudreau. The Rangers had traded for him at the time. I told you guys that it seemed like it was pretty much set in stone that they had a deal in place. They end up signing that deal, 6 years, $21.85 million, works out to about $3.6 million per year. I know fans have taken issue with the average annual value on that, but that also feels like old news at this point. As we stand right now, Gaudreau is easily the most impactful addition that the Rangers have made so far this offseason. Now, will they make more additions? We don't know. Usually, at the end of the first day of free agency, a lot of the heavy lifting has been done traditionally. That could change, of course, and we're going to talk about some of those possibilities, but where we stand right now is that following the Gaudreau signing, we actually spoke to Gaudreau the day of the NHL draft, and everybody was kind of on high alert about what the Rangers might do. Would they make a trade prior to the draft? That seemed like the time to strike. That is when teams had the most assets at their disposal, because not only did they have players and prospects to trade, but they also had picks in that night's draft. So obviously everybody was looking out for Jack Eichel, but there was also handful of other trades that went down that day, and the Rangers made one of them. This one, of course, was not very popular with the fan base, but they do send Pavel Buchnevich to the St. Louis Blues in exchange for Sammy Blais, a forward, bigger forward, grittier forward, guy who looks like he's going to play on their fourth line in all likelihood, and a 2022 second-round pick. Now, had that pick been a first-round pick, I think the backlash from fans wouldn't have been quite as severe, but Buchnevich is an incredibly popular player. He really has grown to become one of the fan favorites in the last few years. So I was fully expecting that whenever he did get traded, which, you know, we had warned you guys about for weeks, we thought was probably coming, that there was going to be some kind of a visceral reaction, an emotional reaction in some ways. But the trade, at face value, no doubt about it, is underwhelming. The Rangers basically traded their top-line winger for a guy who's going to play on their fourth line. Now, the pick, we'll see what that turns into. I don't think we should devalue that pick. But as far as the Rangers and what their team is going to be in the upcoming season, that trade weakened this roster. There's no way to sugarcoat that. I asked Chris Drury that point blank that night, how do you justify this trade when you've been talking all summer about wanting to take the next step, wanting to be a playoff team, wanting to improve the roster, because that trade clearly did not improve the roster. Now, I can list off the reasons, and I've spent a lot of time in the last week talking to people about these reasons, why the Rangers made the trade, and I do think that there are some justifiable reasons here. The first thing, first and foremost, is financial. It's about the salary cap. A lot of things that are happening right now in the NHL are about the salary cap. This flat $81.5 million salary cap is screwing up a lot of teams right now. Because if you look at the trajectory of player salaries and what teams were adding just before the COVID-19 pandemic, including the Rangers, in giving a 7-year contract extension to Chris Kreider at $6.5 million per year, they were anticipating by this time the salary cap would be in the upper 80s, approaching 90. Here we are, we're still at 81.5. And what that means is that teams are having to make difficult decisions. And in a lot of cases, unless they're taking hometown discounts, they're not able to keep their young players when they come up to a point where they're due for new deals. Now, the Rangers have a lot of those players. We've talked about this several times. Obviously, at the top of the list is Mika Zibanejad, who's going to be a free agent next year, and there's been a lot of talk recently about what that contract might cost. I can tell you that I don't think it's as high as some of the stuff I've seen speculated, but it's going to be a very high number. It's going to be upwards of 9-ish million, if not more. Could push 10. But Zibanejad is a big one the Rangers are bracing for. They're also bracing for Adam Fox, and over the weekend, we saw Cale Makar, who is definitely going to be the defenseman that Fox gets compared to more than any other. They came in the league at the same time. Makar won the Calder, and then Fox follows it up the next year by one-upping him and winning the Norris Trophy. So Makar gets a contract worth $9 million a season. And now that is going to be the number that Fox is going to look at, no doubt about it. The Rangers are going to have to come close to $9 million. Maybe they can get him a little under that, but $9 million is what you have to expect to pay per season for Adam Fox. So Zibanejad and Fox right there, you're talking about a combined cap hit of $18 million, maybe more. So that's a lot for the Rangers to prepare themselves for. And then on top of that, you have Kaapo Kakko and Vitali Kratsoff, who are both going to be restricted free agents next summer. You move ahead, Alexi Lafreniere, Keandre Miller. The deals are only going to keep expiring. And oh, by the way, right now, they also have to give a contract extension to Igor Shesterkin. And those negotiations are, I mean, I have full confidence that it will get done, but those sound like they are kind of tough negotiations right now. And they also have Filip Hedl. So from the Rangers' perspective, Pavel Buchnevich, especially as a winger, which they feel they are much deeper at winger than they are at center, had to be expendable. He ends up getting a 4-year, $5.8 million per year contract from the St. Louis Blues. The Rangers were not in a position to pay him that. Now, the counter argument, and I know a lot of people are going to bring this up, and I don't disagree with it, is that if the Rangers were looking to put the best possible team on the ice next year, why not give Buch a 1-year deal, take him to arbitration if you need to. Now, that obviously wouldn't help his relationship with the team, and I'm sure he wouldn't be a happy player going into the season with sort of a lame duck status, knowing that he had no future here. So that's something you have to take into consideration as well. I know it's easy for the people that like to play GM from home to say just do that, but there are dynamics as far as the locker room to consider. But I can see the argument there. And then either you're in the playoff race and you keep him and he helps you stay in the race and he helps you hopefully go on a playoff run, or if you're not in the playoff race, you trade him at the deadline. And we have seen players of lesser quality than Buchnevich get traded at the deadline for more than a second-round pick and a fourth liner. But with that being said, I have to tell you guys that I asked around about this quite a bit, and I've heard from multiple people that that was not the market for Buchnevich right now. Because of the flat cap environment, the Rangers were not getting the type of offers that you might expect they would get. Maybe they could have milked a late first-round pick out of somebody, but they wouldn't have been able to also get a player. I was told this from a couple different people. And I don't even know, I can even sit here and tell you for sure that anybody offered a first-round pick. I don't know if anybody did. But I know that they liked Sammy Blais. They thought he was a perfect fit for the direction that Drury wants to take this team. And they got the second-round pick out of it. So I was told that was the best offer they could find. They had tried to shop Buchnevich for a top-six caliber center. They could not find any takers on that. And so they ultimately, after looking into dealing him for months, this is something that was well known around the league that had been going on behind closed doors for months. Finally, on the eve of the draft, they decide to take the best offer on the table and move on, in part for the financial reasons that we talked about, in part because they do feel like they have such depth at winger, and they do want to give Alexi Lafreniere and Kaapo Kakko and Vitali Kratsoff a chance to move up in the lineup. That's definitely part of this as well. They value those young players, and they want to push those guys into the top six. And if you look at the way that they are building this team, which now we'll get into the free agency stuff too, having all of those quote-unquote skilled forwards who are dispersed throughout your lineup. As we saw last year, the Rangers had a third line of all these high draft picks. Chris Drury is convinced that that is not the way to build a team, that that is not going to work for the Rangers if they want to get over the hump and get this team to the next level. So they looked at it like they wanted to have a pretty clear separation between their top six and their bottom six. That doesn't mean they don't want their bottom six to score, but they want their bottom six to do the little things that they believe it takes to win. And I can tell you, I was texting with a former player this week, and he really stressed and echoed those sentiments that the Rangers, with all their skill, were too risky with the puck, did not manage the puck well, did not do a good job of digging pucks out of one-on-one battles and corners and those kind of situations, and did not play good defense because they were constantly putting themselves in these vulnerable positions and not winning puck battles. So they needed players that were going to bring the type of physicality and effort level that it takes to do those kind of things. You can look at the Tampa Bay Lightning and all the skill that they had before they won those cups. It wasn't until they went out and rounded out their roster, balanced out their roster with the likes of Blake Coleman and Barclay Gaudreau, that they were able to finally take that next step. So that is where the Rangers feel like they're at. And to have those clearly defined roles, Chris Drury felt like he was going to inevitably need to trade some quote-unquote top six players. And because of the contract status, that's why Buchnevich ended up being the guy. I can understand why. But again, I can't sit here and say that I don't agree with the people who think that there's a valid argument to maybe have held on to him, especially because as it stands right now, when that trade went down, I heard from a few different people that were like, oh, this has to mean the Rangers have something else up their sleeve, whether it's Eichel or whatever. But here we are, however many hours into free agency, 9+ hours, it's a little after 9 o'clock on Wednesday, 9+ hours into free agency. The Rangers did not make any big splash signings today, and they have not executed a trade for the type of center that we know they would ideally like to add. So you are looking at a slightly diminished top six going into next season, even if you feel like you've fortified your bottom six, and you've definitely improved your decor. You look at the signings the Rangers made today. Patrick Nemeth is, I guess you could call him the headliner. He's definitely the one guy that you know will be, Nemeth, I should say. I looked this up before the show and I messed it up. It's been a long day, I'm sorry. But Nemeth, Patrick Nemeth, he's the one guy that we know is going to be in the lineup. He'll play on that bottom pair. There's going to be a competition. They're definitely going to frame it that way for the right-handed spot. Nemeth is a left-handed defenseman, so for the right-handed spot, there's going to be an open competition. I think the strong belief is that Nils Lundqvist will enter training camp as the favorite, but there's going to be a lot of guys there. Braden Schneider and Zach Jones are probably next on the depth chart, so we'll see how that shakes out. But you're going into next season. You essentially replaced Brandon Smith, who had a good season and was a valuable player for the Rangers, but we know he had his limitations. And Libor Hájek, who we also know has his limitations. You're replacing those two guys with Nemeth, who grades out as a very strong stay-at-home defender, and we know he's going to bring the physical elements that the Rangers want. And Nils Lundqvist, who a lot of people would argue is the best prospect in the organization. So the decor you have to feel like is better. They also add Jared Tinordi, who is a big, bruising, 6'6" kind of guy. I don't think you're going to see him in the lineup very often, but I do think the Rangers valued him because he brings some of the toughness. He's a willing to drop the gloves kind of guy. I could see them using him in certain games, maybe against a team like the Islanders or the Capitals, where they feel like they want more size and toughness in the lineup. And then they sign a couple of depth forwards in Dryden Hunt, who is actually an interesting prospect, a 25-year-old kid who has very good defensive metrics. And, of course, the triumphant return of Greg McKegg, who was here 2 years ago, played most of the 19-20 season as the Rangers' fourth-line center, went to Boston last year, really didn't get much ice time at all, and now he's back. Those last three guys, Tinordi, Hunt, and McKegg, you know, maybe they'll play in some games, maybe there'll be healthy scratches on the roster, maybe they'll be with AHL Hartford. They're depth signings. I think Hunt has a legitimate chance to get into the lineup as a fourth line kind of guy, along with a guy like Sammy Blais. But you have depth now in your bottom six. You're looking at Gaudreau, you're looking at Blais, Hunt, McKegg. They kept Kevin Rooney. I definitely think Morgan Barron is a guy who you're going to see in the lineup this year. And he again brings that size, 6'4" kid. He'll do some of the dirty work for you as well. And there is some offensive upside there. So that bottom six has a more defined look to it now. There's not as much offensive upside in there, but I think you're going to see guys in there that will do the little things that lead to those gritty goals by causing chaos in front of the net, throwing pucks at the net, digging pucks out of corner, all that kind of stuff. And then the decor, I think, is objectively better. So the real question moving forward is the top six. Are the Rangers going to roll with what they have? And what they have is not anything to scoff at. Let me be clear about that. You're looking at Artemi Panarin, Mika Zibanejad, Ryan Strome, Kaapo Kakko, Alexi Lafreniere, and then that sixth spot is going to be either Chris Kreider or Vitali Kravtsov. You know, one of them will probably end up on the third line if the roster stays as it is now, and the other one would be on the second line. That's a solid top six. It's not obviously missing Buchnevich. Kakko and Kravtsov are not at the level of Buchnevich quite yet, but who knows? What the Rangers are hoping, what they are giving these guys the opportunity to do, which I know people had been clamoring for, is they're going to give Lafreniere, Kakko, and Kravtsov the opportunity to step up. I had a fan tweet at me and say, oh, great, they signed McKeag and Hunt to replace the offense of Buchnevich, but that is not what they did here. What they did is they are banking on the kids that they've drafted highly in the last few years to make up for that offense. And they're capable of it. They have the talent to do it, and now they will have the opportunity. What we're going to watch in the next few days, and who knows, by the time this podcast comes out, a lot of this stuff could change. What we're going to watch in the next few days is, does the Eichel thing happen? Do they maybe add a free agent? A lot of them were signed today, but there's still a few floating out there. I would keep my eye on a couple guys from the Boston Bruins, David Krejci and Nick Ritchie. Krejci is a center who, I think if you look at the statistics, had a better season than any of the other free agent centers who were available, but he's 35 years old, and that makes teams reluctant to go and give him any kind of a big contract. If I were the Rangers, I would think about going to a guy like him and saying, hey, you know, we know you're a good leader. We know you're a good defensive player. We know you bring some offense. We know you're limited maybe at this age or this point in your career, but we'll give you a one-year deal. We have the cap space where we're willing to maybe overpay for it a little bit, and then we look at you as a middle six guy for us potentially. I would definitely consider that if I were the Rangers, because that cap space that they have right now, we know they're going to need it next summer, but if a guy on a one-year deal is not going to be problematic for you next summer. So I would be willing to overpay a little bit on a one-year deal now. And then Ritchie is a guy who there's a lot of buzz around right now. I definitely have heard that the Rangers are interested in him. Big dude, like 230 pounds, kind of a bull out there, definitely a power forward, has some goal scoring upside. He had 15 this season, big heavy shot. So Ritchie is a guy who I think would look really good on this third or fourth line as well. So I would keep an eye on those two guys. But then with the Eichel thing, you know what, actually, I'm going to save Eichel for the second half of the show because I scanned the Twitter questions and I saw how many of them there were about Jack Eichel. So we're going to talk about that in the second half of the show. We just went 18 plus minutes with very little Jack Eichel talk. We'll do a couple minutes on it after this interview with Brennan Hoffman. But let's get to that now. Let's have some NHL draft talk and then we'll come back and we'll do more of the offseason stuff. And now we will welcome into the show a very special guest, a guy I'm sure Rangers fans will be very excited to hear from, and that is this year's first-round pick, Brennan Hoffman. And Brennan, first off, congratulations, and secondly, how are you doing? What have the last few days been like for you?
Yeah, no, I appreciate, you know, being on the show. Thank you very much. And yeah, the last few days have been hectic. They've been pretty crazy. So, you know, it's a new week, so it's starting to slow down a little bit, but it's been lots of fun. And obviously such an honor on Friday night. So it's been a fun weekend and a fun Monday, and see how Tuesday goes.
What's the coolest thing that's happened to you in the last few days? Maybe somebody you heard from or just a moment with your family, anything like that?
Yeah, just, you know what, after I got drafted, you know, Ryan Strome texted me. So it's always pretty cool to get a guy like that texting you. And, you know, some of the Rangers staff called me to congratulate me, and I had my friends and family over here Friday night, and we celebrated together. We had some fun, and it was great.
I know Strome's an Ontario guy too, so I'm sure you probably followed him, or you guys maybe grew up close to each other, maybe.
Yeah, he played in the league I played in when I was a kid, and he played in the OHL as well. So I know who he is, and I've obviously watched him over the years.
Cool. Very cool. So I guess I'll start with the Rangers, and whether or not you had a hunch that you were going to go to them, did you feel good about your conversations, or was it a complete surprise when you heard your name?
I felt good having conversations with them. We had a few conversations over Zoom and over the phone with a couple of scouts, and I felt confident with them. And once I saw their pick come in, I was pretty confident in myself and that I would go there. And like I said, it's just an absolute honor to be selected by them, and them to have trust in me, and to be their first round pick this year is something obviously really special. And I had a good feeling going into it, but you know what, you never knew what was going to happen that day. So it was just awesome that they believed in me.
It sounded like it was pretty loud in your house when we were talking to you on the Zoom afterwards.
Yeah, I tried to go to a quiet room as I could, and everyone just jumping up and down. My mom's favorite city is actually New York, and she's always wanted to go, and we went there when we were younger. So she's always said that she wants to spend New Year's Eve in New York. So it was kind of pretty fitting that I, you know, got selected there, and we could do that maybe as a family one day.
So you got to go there once when you were a kid?
Yeah, I got to go there once when I was a kid. I forget how long ago or how old I was, but you know what, I remember going there, and it was a great great 4 or 5 days we had there.
Sweet. Awesome. So you said you talked to some of the scouts. I'm sure you probably had conversations with Chris Drury. Like, what's their message been to you so far in the early going, especially after they drafted you?
We haven't talked too much about details about you know, the Rangers. They just wanted to congratulate me, kind of give me the weekend, and to take it all in, to celebrate a little bit. You know, it's something that us kids have worked for our whole lives, and they didn't want to, you know, put any pressure on me right away to answer questions from them, and which I completely understand. I completely respect, and I'm glad they respect that as well. And you know, I'm sure, you know, this week or next week, some more calls and some more conversations about when I have to head down there will be starting to happen. So we'll see what happens then.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think you got a lot of Rangers fans excited when you said you model your game after Matthew Tkachuk. I think Rangers fans really like guys that bring that hard nose approach, that are willing to get their hands dirty a little bit, but also have some skill to their game. Is that how you've always played, or has that evolved over the years? Like how have you kind of developed into that sort of player?
Yeah, that's kind of evolved over the years, honestly. You know, it really evolved this year a lot. I was fortunate to go play in Switzerland and professionally go over there because the OHL wasn't playing. And I said it in a few interviews that what I thought it was the coolest thing in the world. I was 17 at the time, and I was knocking down guys that were 30 years old. And I thought that was just the coolest thing as a kid to do, and kind of intimidate them a little bit was cool. And I kind of picked it up and ramped up this year being called that Matthew Tkachuk on my team. And that's kind of the player I model my game after, but a guy like Kyle Connor, like you said, who can throw in a little bit of skill and can score as well.
So did you feel any intimidation being out there against guys that were a lot older than you?
Honestly, I didn't, just because I thought that maybe the pressure was more on them, just because they didn't want to really, they didn't know how to play against a 17-year-old kid. They didn't know how much energy I brought and what my game style was like. You know, playing against men, sometimes pressures doesn't really faze me too much, right? I love handling pressure, and playing against older guys is a little bit of pressure, like I said. And it didn't really bother me playing against guys older than me.
Did it make you learn anything about your game or adjust anything about your game? Like, was there anything that playing in that particular league did for you as a player that you felt like helped your growth?
You have to respect your opponents, I think, even more at the next level. I think that, you know, guys my age, and when you're playing guys 2 or 3 years older than you, it's all similar kind of. I mean, obviously there's more guys that stand out, but when you're playing a guy that's 25, 30, 35 years old, you just got to respect them more and their careers. And they know stuff that you don't. They've been playing the game longer than you, and just kind of you look at the game and you respect the game a lot more because they're working hard. And you look up to a guy, especially a guy on my team, he's 38 years old and he's working his tail off every day. And I mean, his career is coming close to an end, right? And he's working every day. He's always the first one in the gym, last one off the ice. He's always wants to get better. And that's just a guy you look at and it's inspiring.
Cool. Very cool. Last thing on Switzerland, it sounded like from what you said the other day that you really enjoyed that experience. What was it weird being so far from home? I know you had to go there to play because the OHL season got canceled, but I mean, were you homesick or what did you like about the experience once you got there? How did it work out for you?
Yeah, honestly, I wasn't homesick at all. I thought I would for sure be a little bit of homesick. You know, I'm very good with that. And you know, that's what FaceTime's for. You can FaceTime your family and you get to see them face to face. So I didn't really get homesick. The cooking was great. It was just like here at home, and the family I lived with was great. They did an outstanding job with me and Mason McTavish when he came over. And you know what, it was like I said earlier, it was a great experience. It's an experience that I would, if I had to, I'd do it again. And it was tons of fun.
It's important to have good food for sure. I would think that would that would help in that situation.
Exactly.
So in terms of your game for the fans, I know we talked about it a little bit the other day, but we can elaborate more now. What would you say you see as your strengths?
I think my strengths, you know what, a big part of my game is that I can play anywhere you want me to play. I think that I used to be a centerman back in the day, and then I moved over to the wing, and I'm a left wing slash a right wing, and I can play both sides of the ice if you want me to. That's a big strength that not many players can do. So I can play left and right wing. I've kind of developed into that natural winger, but if I need to play right wing, I can. If I need to play left wing, I can. If I have to play on the first line, the third line, the fourth line, I will. And you know, another part of my game is I'm very competitive, I'm very physical, and I like to score. So I think those are kind of the strengths of my game.
You think because you bring that physicality, and you mentioned playing either side, you mentioned not caring which line you're on, you think that could help you as you move forward? Because a lot of guys that are high draft picks, obviously they came from younger leagues where they were always one of, if not the best player on the team. But as you move up, you know, the roles change and you could be anywhere in the lineup. So it sounds like you're very open to whatever your role might end up being as you progress here.
Yeah, exactly. Over the years, I've had lots of roles. When I was a kid, I was that guy. I was that 1-2 guy on the team with a buddy of mine, and we would just light it up all the time. And then going to the OHL my rookie year, I was that third line guy that was kind of like a glue guy. Go out there, you know, score if you can, but at the same time, just play physical, do the right thing, get used to the league. And Switzerland kind of was on that first line, second line role where I was told to go out there to score and produce and do well and be physical. And then fortunate to go play U18s for Team Canada. And on there, I was a complimentary player with two players. So I was that third player on the first line that would like to open up their players and make their centerman and their right winger look good. So if I need to be a playmaker, I'll be a playmaker. If I'm told to score, I'll score. You need to be that complimentary player on that first line. Just work hard and get the two top guys a puck. I'll do that. I'll do anything the coach asks me to do on the ice.
So as you assess your game, and especially coming off the experience in Switzerland, looking ahead to what you need to improve on to hopefully get to that NHL level at some point, what are you focused on? Like, what do you feel like you need to get better at?
I think it's just, well, the NHL is just next level, obviously. I think just overall game, I think one most important thing I'm working on now is just continuing to build size and strength. Over the last 5 years, my trainer and I have put on a lot of muscle and a lot of good weight. And if I can put on a little bit, I think 5 to 10 pounds over the next couple of years, I think that sits me perfectly where I want to be at the next level. And, you know, and maybe another thing is working on that defensive zone in the right side of the ice. I'm pretty good in the left side, like I said, but again, like I said earlier, I can play both sides of the ice, but if I can really improve that right side in the D zone, I can even be more of a value on that right side.
I know you said you guys haven't had much conversations about next steps or anything like that, but could you see yourself being back in the OHL with Flint next year? Is that a possibility?
Yeah, I think that's a possibility for sure. You know, obviously all of us want to play in the NHL right away, and we want to help a team win a Stanley Cup and want to help a team get better. But technically, you know, all of us kids in this year's draft, we almost missed a full year of hockey. You didn't play much, so you don't know what's going to happen. Maybe I do an outstanding job at camp and rookie camp, and maybe I get a sniff or get a couple games, but you never know what's going to happen. I don't know. I'm not expecting to go in there and play a full season. I'm not expecting to go in there and play a game. We'll see what happens, and we'll play it by ear.
One thing I noticed, because we obviously covered him in the draft last year, is one of your teammates at Flint was Evan Vierling. You guys play together?
Yep.
Is that pretty cool? Like, have you heard from him? Have you guys talked about both being Rangers prospects now?
Yeah, Veers and I, you know, he texted me after and he was all pumped up and he was really excited. So hopefully, you know, he's down there at camp whenever camp is, and I get to see him again. I haven't seen him since I played with him in Flint, and he's a great player. He's got lots of speed. He's got lots of talent, and hopefully we play together again one day.
That'd be pretty cool, especially if you guys play together next season, build some chemistry, hopefully to make your way together towards the NHL.
Yeah, that would be something else.
All right, let's move on. I want to have a little fun here. We'll stop talking about the stuff about what you're going to do next year and your game and all that. But I do want to ask a couple hockey questions, but more like nostalgic kind of stuff. Your hockey journey, we'll call it. Like, what made you fall in love with the game? Have you always been a big hockey guy, or did that evolve over the years? Was it from your parents, or how did you come to love the game?
I've always loved the game. I've always wanted to play hockey. It's obviously come from my family, from my dad to my mom, my sister. I've always loved the game. I'm always playing for them. And I think once I really truly started loving the game was in 2010, where Sidney Crosby scored the golden goal for Canada at the Olympics. I think that's when all of us kids, I think, would say that's when they started falling in love with the game. And I was 7 years old at the time, and that's when, you know, you look up and you see a guy like Sidney Crosby, who's one of the best players in the league, and see him do what he did that game is just something special. And whenever you look at it on YouTube or whenever it comes up, you always get goosebumps thinking about it.
Do you have a coolest moment for yourself on the ice, whether it was when you were a kid, more recently in Switzerland? Do any moments for you stand out as something that where you had the most fun, or is a great memory for you in terms of your playing days?
I have a lot. I think one of my best memories that I have is scoring the game winning goal at the OHL Cup with my minor hockey team. We had an unbelievable team. Our team was 74-0-2 or something crazy like that, and we've won a crazy amount of games, and we won that in overtime, and it was just a great game. It was an unreal feeling, and it's something that all of us kids back then worked for 7 years straight to win that tournament.
74-0-2, you said?
Yeah, something like that, something crazy like that.
That's pretty crazy. That is very so. Not a single loss the whole season.
We lost one game in overtime, so I guess 74-0-2-1.
Yeah, so but no regulation losses.
No regulation losses.
That must have been some team.
So yeah, it was crazy.
Did you have a favorite team growing up? Are you maybe you're closer to the Leafs or the Senators or some other team did you like best growing up?
Yeah, I was a big Leafs fan, obviously, just because of being here in Toronto. But I think my favorite team, just going back to Sidney Crosby's Pittsburgh Penguins, I think just what he's a Canadian kid everyone wants to be, right? And as a hockey player, and he's best player in the world, I think, in my opinion, and he's just someone really cool to look up to, and he's a great leader. So I've always watched Pittsburgh over the years.
You said you've been to New York. Is there anything that you're most looking forward to when you get a chance to visit or when you get a chance to live there?
I never really went in or saw Madison Square Garden. So I think that, we saw everything else there in New York. We just, we didn't have time to go see MSG. And I think that just even looking at the rink would be something really cool and really special. And I can't wait to walk in the rink, even as it is to just look at it one day. I think it would be something really, really cool. And just thinking about even getting an opportunity to play on that ice surface in front of some of the greatest fans in the world, right, would just be awesome.
A lot of history in that building. And you mentioned the fans. I think with the way that you describe your game, it sounds like you play the type of game that they would like. So I would imagine that'll be an awesome experience for you.
I hope, yeah.
So when you're not playing hockey, I mean, some guys, I ask this question, they're like, oh, no, I'm always thinking about hockey. But do you have other hobbies or other things you like to do in your spare time?
Yeah, I've lots of buddies around here. We like to golf a lot. Honestly, I like to spend a lot of time with my family. I'm always on the road in Flint, and you don't get that much time to see your family with being on the road all the time. And, especially at the next level, I'm going to be in New York and they'll be here in Toronto. So you don't get to see them too often. So, spending time with your family for me is really important. And, But at the same time, you want to have fun with your buddies on the golf course or a couple of video games here and there. But for me, it's most importantly my family.
A lot of hockey guys say golf. You've been playing a long time. Are you like a ringer, or you just like to get out there to have some fun?
I've been playing for about 2.5-3 years now. I just go out there, hit the ball with a few buddies. We like to joke around, and we like to have some fun. And sometimes we take it competitively and serious, but most of the time we just like to have fun with it.
You say you like to have fun. Are you a guy who in the locker room setting is do you like to joke around? Do you keep it loose, or are you pretty serious when it comes to that?
I'm the type of guy that likes to be loose a bit and have fun. I think it may take a couple of weeks to get used to, or a week or so to, you know, get familiar with the players. But, you know what, I think everyone at the next level is just more mature, and it's just an easier fit. So, yeah, I'm the type of guy that likes to have fun. But at the same time, you know what, once, you know, 5 minutes before the game, I like to be serious and, you know, I like to focus on the task at hand.
You listen to music? Do you have any favorite like pregame music or anything like that?
Actually, I don't listen to music on my own before the game. I just listen to whatever's playing in the locker room.
Interesting. Some guys are like, I have to listen to the same song every single time, and some people just don't want to hear anything.
Yeah, no, whatever the DJ's playing in the room, I listen to.
Uh-huh. Last thing I'll ask you, because this for me, coming from, you talk about family a lot. For my family, this is like something that we feel like is telling and can give you some shine light into people's personalities. You mentioned the food in Switzerland, and that was important for you for it to be good. What's your favorite food? Because especially once you get to New York, you can find pretty much any kind of cuisine you want. So maybe we can give you some recommendations if you have a favorite.
I don't know what my favorite food is. I think that my mom makes unbelievable chicken sandwiches. I think after working out and after hockey, I'm at home here, and there's always a chicken sandwich in the fridge ready for me to eat. And I think that's one of my favorite go-to foods to eat after a meal or just a snack on.
The New York deli scene, like sandwiches around New York, to me, it's the best in the country, or probably the best in the world. So we'll definitely get you some good sandwiches when you get here. All right, awesome. Brendan, I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much. Congratulations again, and thank you for the time.
No, thank you very much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Okay, and we're back. Thanks to Brennan for the time. I really appreciate it. That was great to get the chance to kind of talk to him one-on-one. We had the Zoom thing the other night right after the draft, but you get to ask like two questions, and it's very informal, and you know, it's not very personal. So good to talk to him there. Got to get to know him a little bit. Seems like a very good kid. I hope it got you guys excited for the potential there. And to me, the thing that I took out of that the most was hearing him talk about how he feels like he's prepared to play any role at the next level. He doesn't care what line he's on. He doesn't care what side he's on. He's the type of guy whose game might profile well, maybe in the bottom six. And so I think that that's good for you, for Rangers fans to hear, because you know that especially when it comes to wingers, your high-end guys are pretty much set. So if the Rangers were going to take a chance on drafting a kid like that in the first round and pass up on centers, which, you know, we could definitely be critical there, because I think a lot of scouts would tell you that there were some good centers on the board, and actually the three picks right after the Rangers were all centers. But if they were going to take a chance on a winger there, you need a guy who's going to be able to fill other roles for you, because you already have your high-end wingers pretty much in place. So, you know, if he could end up developing into a good third line kind of guy for the Rangers, I think they'd be very happy with that. With that, we're going to move on to your Twitter questions. And as I promised before the interview with Othman, we're going to talk about Jack Eichel, because as I'm scanning through the questions here, they're not 50% Eichel, but there's quite a bit about it. So here's where we're at with that. You've heard from a lot of different people recently that has gotten quiet on that front, and absolutely that is the case. Last week I was talking to a few people about it. This week I have not heard all that much. I did get a text from somebody earlier today that basically said, I have my doubts about the Rangers' involvement in this Eichel process right now. I don't know if they're all in or if they're motivated to be all in on this. I can't sit here and tell you for sure that I think they're out or that I think they are in hardcore. It's really hard to say. I do know that I can tell you, as I wrote about and reported last week, that Chris Drury drew his line in the sand. Kevin Adams, the Buffalo Sabres GM, was pressing for more. Drury tried to see if he could get it done with a package that had Buchnevich and the number 15 pick and a few other assets, and Buffalo scoffed at it. They did the same thing with other teams. There were other teams that made what they felt like were legitimate offers with four or five assets involved in it, but Buffalo was pressing these teams to give up their very best young players. So in the case of the Rangers, I can tell you that I know right off the bat the Sabres asked about Alexis Lafreniere. The Rangers shut that down right away. I wrote a little bit the other day about I know the Sabres would love to have Kaapo Kakko included in that deal. And would Drury be tempted to maybe go that far just to get it done? But everything that I have found in the past week is no, he's not willing to do that. He set his price, and that's as far as he's willing to go. I've heard reports about would Nils Lundqvist or Braden Schneider be a deal breaker. I don't doubt that the Rangers wouldn't want to include those guys, but given the glut of defenseman prospects that we know that they have, I don't feel like if it's a guy that they really want, that they would let that stop them. Because if you trade Lundqvist, you still have Schneider on the right side. If you trade Schneider, you still have Lundqvist on the right side. If you trade Zach Jones, you still have Matthew Robertson on the left side, and vice versa. So you've stockpiled those prospects, and if you really feel that they are all NHL caliber, then you have to inevitably know that they're not all going to fit in your lineup, and you have to deal somebody at some point. So I don't think the defenseman prospects would be a breaking point. We've talked about guys like Filip Hedl, Vitali Kratsov. Obviously, you're going to have to include at least one of those guys in a deal if you're going to make it happen. But at this point, I believe, and I think many other people believe, that the Sabres have overplayed their hand. Because while they were pressing teams like the Rangers to include somebody like Kakko, or the Kings to include somebody like Quinton Byfield, they got passed by. The time to strike seemed pretty obvious to be right before the NHL draft. That's when you could have gotten more picks in the draft. That's when teams were still unable to sign free agents, so they weren't able to go out and fill those holes that they might have had at center through free agency. To me, the time before the NHL draft was absolutely the time to strike. You try to squeeze everything you can out of all those teams if you're Kevin Adams, no doubt about it. But at some point, it would have been in your best interest to take the best offer on the table. He didn't do that. I think he took a strategic gamble that somebody would up their offer because they would see how serious he is about holding on to Eichel. But what we've heard now in the past few days is that Eichel, through his agent, has made it clear that he is not happy about the situation, that he wants to be traded, and that he is not expecting to be with the Sabres come training camp. So the Sabres have sort of backed themselves into a corner now. And now you have a team like the Kings that went out and signed Philip Deneau. You have other teams that are moving in other directions that are filling up salary cap space. So the amount of teams that can feasibly go out and trade for Eichel is dwindling. That would work in the Rangers' favor, no doubt about it. So from my perspective, I believe that Chris Drury is standing firm on what he has been doing the whole time. I'm willing to offer this much. I'm not going to expand on that. If you want to come back and talk, we can talk. The Minnesota Wild are a team that a lot of people are still speculating about. The Anaheim Ducks might be involved. We've heard all kinds of teams coming in and out, in and out. A lot of this is public posturing. A lot of this is sort of negotiating through the media, negotiating through the public, trying to drive the price up or down depending on which side you're on. So it's hard to believe everything that you hear as a rumor. I am still in the position where I believe that the Rangers are involved. They are definitely monitoring the situation, but I don't feel like they're all in. I've heard people from people who have their doubts about how interested they really are when you add up all the factors, which is the $10 million per year salary, which is the neck injury, which is the assets that they would have to give up to get him. It's a lot. But obviously, if he's a healthy player, he completely changes the dynamic of your lineup. And with that, I want to one last time touch on this. The Rangers are not going out to acquire Jack Eichel to immediately turn around and kick Mika Zibanejad out the door. Now, could there come a time when they have to make that decision, especially if Mika is asking for a $10 million a year salary or something similar to what Eichel has? It's possible. We've talked about how tight the cap space is. But I do not believe that their intention was ever to go out and find a center to replace Zibanejad. The intention has always been to find a top six center who can team up with Zibanejad and make your top six as potent and explosive as possible. So I don't buy into this. If Eichel is acquired, there's no chance the Rangers keep Mika Zibanejad. There's a chance that they wouldn't be able to. Negotiations could fall flat. They, you know, something could go wrong on that end of it. But I believe the worst case scenario would be that they acquire Eichel. They let Eichel and Zibanejad be their top two centers for the season, which they can absolutely afford. And they go for it. They try to have the best season that they possibly can. They try to go on a playoff run. They put the best roster out there that they possibly can for the 21-22 season. And then you reevaluate in the summer. Then you try to negotiate with Zibanejad. And especially if the team has success and Zibanejad wants to see that through, maybe you can talk him into coming down a half million, $1 million, whatever it may be. But I don't think that it would be in the Rangers' best interest to go out and make this move already thinking that you're kicking Mika Zibanejad out the door. And I have never gotten that impression. I have been told from at least one very reliable source that while it would be difficult to manage the salary cap with both of them, they don't think it's impossible. So I keep that in the back of your mind. I don't completely dismiss the notion that they might not be able to keep both, but I don't look at it as a slam dunk either. So, and from my perspective, as I've told you guys before, if you go out and get Eichel, I want both of them. Maybe I'm greedy, but I'm trying to see what they can do in the same lineup together for at least 1 year, and then next summer you figure out what the next step is. But we know they can afford it this year. There's no doubt about that. They might offload Ryan Strome or whatever it might be, but obviously Eichel would be an upgrade over Strome. So just to put a bow on this Eichel conversation, I can tell you guys that I've heard from people who believe that the Rangers are not enamored with the idea of him, that they have come to the conclusion that it's time to move on. But I also know that they have been monitoring the situation the whole time, and that if the price falls to a place where they're comfortable with it, I think it would be advantageous for them to take advantage of that situation. And I do believe that Chris Drury is ready to strike. He didn't do anything crazy in free agency so far. They still have a lot of money left to spend, especially if you look at the cap this year. They still have around $16, $17 million available right now. And I do believe that they're potentially in a position to strike if the price comes down. I can't sit here and tell you that I think it's going to happen. I would probably put it under 50% if I had to give you a guess in the moment. But my antenna is up, absolutely, because the longer this drags out, you have to think the more vulnerable the position is for Buffalo and the more likely it is that a team like the Rangers could step in and take advantage. So that's where we're at with that. We'll see what happens. That's the main thing everybody's watching for the next however many days until the situation is resolved. I feel like we've talked about this before. I've been like, I'm over talking about Eichel. I want this to be resolved one way or another. Hopefully we won't be talking about it next week. Here we are next week. We're still talking about it. We'll see if we're talking about it next week. Obviously, if the Rangers acquire him, we'll be talking about it for quite a while. So we'll see what happens. But I do think they're in it. I just don't know what is going to be the end game here if you're Buffalo, and what they're ultimately going to be willing to take. How far can they drag this out without eventually just taking some kind of offer? I don't know. All right, let's move on to the next question, which a handful of people are asking about Alexander Georgiev and him potentially requesting a trade. Now, I can tell you that I had heard whispers about this in the past, and now it seems to be kind of leaking out there a little bit more. I do not know with absolute certainty that he has demanded a trade, but I do have the sense that he wants to be a starter. I've talked to him in person about that before, even before COVID, and that he can see the writing on the wall. Igor Shesterkin is the number one goalie here. He's not going to get more of an opportunity than that in New York. And so I could obviously see a situation where he would want to move on. And I do believe that the Rangers are shopping him right now. What are they going to get for him? I don't know. They could definitely include him in an Eichel trade. That is a real possibility, especially because Buffalo does not really have a goalie right now. But otherwise, it's hard to gauge the goalie market because you see some goalies get traded and you think they're pretty good goalies and they barely get anything in return. And then you see other goalie trades where you're like, wow, how did that guy get that? So it really depends on another team, how much they value him, how much they're willing to give up. If a guy is asking for a trade, then that kind of takes away from the Rangers' leverage if other teams know that. So I think there's a solid chance that he is traded before the season starts, and then the Rangers have Keith Kincaid in place as their backup. But I can't tell you that I've heard of a specific team that I think is very interested in him. I do think the Buffalo thing makes sense because of their goalie situation, but I have not heard any specific rumors that I feel comfortable reporting as far as I know this team really wants Georgiev, and that's a potential trade partner with the Rangers. If it's not involved in a Buffalo deal, it's probably going to be for, you know, a mid draft pick, something like that. I do not see the Rangers getting a first round pick. I know there have been rumors about that. I would have a hard time believing that. You're probably looking at more like a third or fourth round pick, maybe a prospect, maybe another bottom six kind of guy. I don't know, but the chances of Georgiev getting traded are definitely real. All right, moving on to the next thing. And again, I'm just kind of going with the theme that seems to be coming up the most because we got a lot of questions this week. I can't even believe why. I mean, what's been going on that you guys are so interested in? All right, so this one, it's just a lot of people are asking about, like, if the roster remains as it is, how do I see the lineup playing out? And I think it's pretty straightforward. We talked about it in the beginning of the program, and that would be a first line of, I think Alexi Lafreniere will play with Mika Zibanejad if things are the way that they are right now. My question is, what happens on the right wing? Do the Rangers move Kaapo Kakko up there and give him that first line opportunity? I think that's a real possibility. Or does somebody like Chris Kreider move to the offside? Or Lafreniere move to the offside? You know, you could have a first line with Lafreniere, Mika, and Kreider. Or you could have a first line with Lafreniere, Mika, and Kaapo Kakko. The second line, chances are you would see Artemi Panarin stick with Ryan Strome. And it is interesting, all the Ryan Strome commentary recently, because the guy's coming off two good years. I do not think it's a worst-case scenario for the Rangers to go into next season with him as their second-line center, especially when you consider that he only has 1 year left on his deal. So he's not hurting you for all those future cap considerations and contracts that we've talked about. He's a pretty valuable guy to have right now because he's a solid placeholder who you can trust in a second-line role if needed. And he's not hurting you in the future in terms of your cap space. So Panarin and Strome on your second line. And the right wing on that line, could it be Vitali Kratsov? That's a question that I'm asking right now because I think you're either going to see somebody like Kreider on the offside on that line, or it's going to be Vitali Kratsov who gets the opportunity there on a second line role. And I know that the Rangers do feel that he has the upside and the skill to succeed in that kind of a role. Third line, maybe you have Kreider on the left wing. And then I think you're looking at Philip Hedel and Barclay Gaudreau as sort of interchangeable. I think Gaudreau is going to take more of the faceoffs, but I do think the Rangers want to continue to try to develop Philip Hedel at center. So I could see them playing a kind of an interchangeable role where they switch in and out. Gaudreau talked about playing a system in Tampa where the positions were really just about where you entered as far as when you came into the offensive zone, and then it's kind of a free-for-all from there. So I could see those guys sort of sharing that center role with Gaudreau taking more of the faceoffs, and that's your third line. And then the fourth line, listen, that's going to be a wide-open competition right now with all the guys the Rangers have brought in. I really like Morgan Barron's chances of being on that line. Kevin Rooney is the incumbent as a fourth-line center. And Sammy Blais, you have to feel pretty strongly, is going to be in the lineup. So those three you could easily see being the fourth line. But Drayden Hunt, who the Rangers signed today, and we talked about, has some upside and they like his defense and all that. He's a guy that definitely should compete for a fourth line spot. Julian Gauthier, I know fans might not want to hear this, but that guy I think is probably destined for Hartford. I do not see him being in the lineup. I don't think the Rangers like the way that he fits in one of those bottom six roles. So that's where you're at right now. And Greg McKegg is like an extra forward, probably in Hartford, or a healthy scratch kind of a guy. So that's where they're at right now with the forwards. You can envision a lineup out there with those forwards. And like we talked about, it doesn't have quite as much skill without Buchnevich, but it does have a little more clearly defined roles as far as bottom six guys who are going to do the intangible kind of things. and top six guys who, in theory, should be your goal scorers and your point producers and all that. The D-core are pretty straightforward. Ryan Lindgren, Adam Fox is one pair. Keandre Miller, Jacob Trouba is the other. Patrick Nemeth and probably Nils Lundqvist is the third. And like I said, you would feel pretty good about that D-core going into the next season, especially with the young guys continuing to develop. Adam Fox coming off a Norris Trophy. You hope you get a full healthy season out of Jacob Trouba, who I think was better in his second year in New York than he was in his first. And you feel pretty good about the balance in that D-core as well, because you've got mobile guys, you've got skilled guys, and you've got some big guys who can throw the body around a little bit now, especially with the addition of Nemeth. Goalie, Igor Shesterkin, no questions there. Probably Keith Kincaid as the backup if Georgiev ends up getting traded. So that's where we're at. We'll see what happens in the coming days. I know a lot of people, it kind of varies actually. I'm seeing a lot of people who are reacting to what's happened by saying, this is terrible. The Rangers said that they wanted to become, you know, a better team and go for the playoffs next year, and they're a worse team. And I think if you're looking at it purely from a talent slash skill standpoint, you would make that argument by losing Buchnevich. But if you look at it from a balance standpoint, I'm curious to see how it plays out. Is Chris Drury right? Is this the necessary moves that he needed to make this team more well-rounded? Or is that an old school, antiquated way of looking at things? Should you just have as much skill in the lineup as possible and let them roll? So Drury clearly has this plan. You know, people are saying to me, what's the plan? Does he have a plan? Clearly he has a plan. You might not like the way that he's executing it. You might not like just seeing all this size and grit, size and grit, size and grit. But that's his plan and he's executing it. So now we have to see how it performs. If it falls flat, if the product is worse than it was the previous year, then we're going to go back to what we talked about months ago when the decision was made to fire Jeff Gorton and John Davidson, that the train was rolling nicely on the tracks. The rebuild was going well. Things were progressing well by most standards, by most people's opinions, including mine. And the decision was made to shake things up. Chris Drury, who I do think is a smart, meticulous guy, was brought in. He came in with a plan. He's executing the plan. It's not a sexy look. You're sacrificing well-liked guys like Buchnevich. You're sacrificing guys that are going to make pretty plays and skill and all that for toughness, for guys that are going to do stuff that doesn't show up on the stat sheet. Will that translate to more wins is ultimately what this is going to come down to. So I think some people like that direction for the team, and I think other people are taking issue with it. It's really divided right now when I look at my comments and my emails and all that kind of stuff. I still have a wait-and-see approach. Number one, because we don't know if anything else is going to happen this offseason. If the Eichel move does go down, all of a sudden everything's turned on its head, and I think people have a very different perception and outlook of how this whole summer went. But even if it doesn't, with this sort of, as Drury has called it, reshaped lineup, how does that look on the ice, and does it translate to more wins? Because I can't sit here and tell you definitively that I think Drury's wrong, that I think adding those gritty elements was a bad move. I do think the Rangers needed more of that. But I also do look at a trade where you get rid of a guy like Buchnevich, who is a high performer, almost a point-per-game player, kills penalties, does all those things for you, and replacing him with a fourth-line guy. And you look at that and you say, how does this make this team better? Well, maybe it will, maybe it won't. The only way we're going to find out is when we see how this season plays out. We will be back, though. We'll have more time to talk before the season starts. We got a long way to go. I'll be back with another episode next week when, you know, maybe there will be more moves to talk about. Maybe there won't be. I don't know. I like the timing of doing this one tonight because I knew that at least a lot of the trade stuff and the first day of free agency and the NHL draft would all be over. So I'm glad we got to recap everything. But now I'm kind of tired. I think I might sneak in a beer and then I'm going to get some rest. So I hope you guys have a good rest of your week. Enjoy the weekend, and I will talk to you next week.